May I please the court and counsel? My name is Robert Dodd. I'm appearing on behalf of the Department of Revenue in this case, the appellant in this matter. I will try to reserve a couple of minutes of my time for rebuttal if possible. Indeed, Your Honor, if we were to discuss the science in this matter, we could be here all evening. And in fact, at trial, we did have a couple of PhDs come in and talk about what is electricity and how is it transmitted, generated, and distributed. And it was very illuminating, very interesting. But here we really have not a scientific problem, but one of application of Colorado statute, Colorado law. There are two reasons why the department claims the district court erred. The first is that generation of electrical energy is not manufacturing as required by Colorado statute.
And can I just step you right there? So I noticed you used the words carefully, generation of electricity, and there's a big distinction in the briefs between electricity and energy, generation of energy. Now, do we have to resolve that on a scientific basis first before we get to the statutory interpretation issue? I mean, what is it that we're talking about here? Is it electricity? Is it energy? Or is that really the same thing?
Thank you, Your Honor. From the proper standpoint, we don't believe that it is necessary for the court to enter into a scientific discussion of whatever difference there may be between the two. And in fact, the department doesn't understand there to be a difference. We have used the terms interchangeably in our brief, and we believe the parties have also used them relatively interchangeably, for instance, in the stipulations. Several of the stipulations that are signed by both parties discuss electrical energy. Others mention electricity. We don't understand that to be a fundamentally different thing. We do think, however, that it raises an important question, and I was going to say that the second point of error of the district court was that electrical energy or electricity is not changeable personal property. So both elements are required in order to establish entitlement to the manufacturing machinery exemption.
So let me ask you this. One of your stipulations was that whatever it is that public service produces is not an intangible personal property. If it is not intangible, does that not imply that it is tangible? I mean, is there any other alternative?
Thank you, Your Honor. And I think that goes to something that's really kind of at the heart of this case, because public service has proceeded on the assumption, if not the express argument, that anything that is not an abstraction idea or intangible property is therefore tangible personal property.
What else can it be?
As I noted in the briefs, Your Honor, and this gets very basically scientific, but physics itself is the study of interaction of matter and energy.
The physics has nothing to do with this. If it is not intangible property, how can it be anything but tangible? Because personal property is divided into two classifications, and only two, tangible and intangible. You have agreed it's not intangible. Doesn't that, as a matter of logic, make it tangible?
No, Your Honor. And I understand why that's compelling. But let me argue the counter, because I believe it has real force. There are things that exist that are not changeable personal property, but nonetheless are very real. There's, for instance, there are many forms of energy: sunlight, light energy, heat energy, sound energy. All those things you can touch, you can feel, you can see. Or in the case of sound, you can't see it, but you can hear it. You can sense it.
You ever touched a 110 circuit?
I probably have, Your Honor.
I've done it many times.
Probably have.
I can feel it.
And you can feel the result of that. The question is, are these things, and to be honest, their experts suggested at trial that sunlight is tangible personal property because you feel photons hitting your skin. The point is, they have oversimplified this case in a very critical way. Simply because something is not an intangible abstraction or idea doesn't mean that it is tangible and corporeal personal property as intended by the Sales Tax Act of 35. I mean, because if we include electrical energy, you do have to include, logically, why not sunlight?
Let me ask you this, because you've just sort of opened the door. The statute defines tangible personal property as corporeal personal property. Those are synonymous terms. In other words, intangible personal property is just a new way of saying corporeal personal property. So how has this legislature defined tangible personal property except in terms of itself?
Thank you.
Which you don't have to thank me for the questions, which is a circular definition.
No, I disagree with the premise of the question. To define tangible personal property as corporeal personal property is not necessarily to say that they are synonymous.
Black's Dictionary.
Well, Black's Dictionary says that corporeal personal property has a real body.
Because it's also tangible personal property.
To the extent that the legislature, Your Honor, and I get the point there, but to the extent the legislature would see any reason to define tangible personal property, I think the intent of interpretation would be to give meaning to every word. And here the legislature has used a different word to define tangible personal
property. That's a synonymous word. If I were to define attorney as to mean lawyer, attorney means lawyer. Does that tell you anything? If I were to say car means automobile, doctor means physician, do any of those define those terms?
Well, no, Your Honor.
Unless you otherwise defined the second term. Corporeal personal property is not defined in Colorado statutes anywhere.
But the well-settled principle of interpretation is that we intend to give meaning to every word that's used, and they've taken the trouble and the effort to define tangible personal property with a singular term, and that's that it must be corporeal. And the word corporeal comes from corpus, having a body. And I think that when we're considering the legislative definition, too, we should consider that it is generally a lay body, not a body of scientists, and that we should consider whether they intended such things as energies, sun, light, heat, wind. All those things have real effects, and we can see them, we can feel them, we can touch them. But they are not tangible personal property under this Sales Tax Act.
Let me ask you a question. There were some 2010 amendments to this exemption statute, and I recognize for purposes of this case, not legally relevant because we're dealing with tax years where those amendments weren't in there. But I'm really curious about one particular provision. In 2010, out of the clear blue sky, they start using words in the same very exemption that I've never seen before, and I don't see in any of the briefs. For example, they talk about an independent power producer. Now, the word production isn't in, you're talking about manufacturing. And then they talk about a provider of retail electrical service. What's public service?
Public service, Your Honor, well, to address your point directly about those statutes, the parties have generally agreed that we can't draw any conclusions from those recent amendments, in part because the legislature has said we don't intend to enforce the legislation. But in terms of whether public service provides a service or whether they're a producer of something, again, I think that goes to the very heart, and we contend they are fundamentally a service provider because they do not sell an article of tangible personal property and they do not manufacture anything.
What's a power producer?
A power producer, I think, in the context of that statute, Your Honor, is a generator of electricity, electrical energy from, and I believe the context is from alternative sources. So
you're caught in the spiral of arguing definitions, aren't you? I mean, I'm not blaming you for it. It's part of the way this case is structured. We have common law definitions of corporeal property and incorporeal property. We have definitions of intangible property and tangible property. Now, the department has adopted a regulation that defines tangible personal property. It defines it in terms of what you're describing. It must have body, it must have feeling. It also describes intangible personal property as shows as an action and ethereal things like patents and those kinds of things. So they put, the department's pretty clear, and it adopted that definition many, many years ago. And it includes within that definition commodities. And you have stipulated that electricity is a commodity. Why doesn't the argument end there?
Because there's no necessary implication that every commodity is going to be tangible corporeal personal property.
That's not what the regulation says. The regulation says commodities are tangible personal property.
We contend that this regulation should be interpreted in light of the governing definition in the statute of tangible personal property. And so, therefore, the agency executive...
Well, don't you agree that the regulation defines corporeal property in the way the common law defines it? It defines corporeal and incorporeal property in much the same language, if not the identical language, used in the common law for describing those things. Only the regulation goes a step, a little step further. It gives examples, among which is commodities.
As a broad category, Your Honor, I'm not sure that's a specific example, but let me disagree with you on this count. Public services argued that that regulation defines tangible personal property. I mean, or that it defines corporeal, but it doesn't. And I think it's fair to say, if you look at the exact language of the regulation, it doesn't say tangible personal property is, it says it embraces. And it also uses things which are generally categories, but also which are considered normally to be substances. And we can use the word substances in the regulation. I think that taken as a whole, the regulation, it might be said, could be more artfully drafted. But we contend that the statute has to govern here, that there has to be a meaning attributed to the affirmative act by the legislature of defining it as tangible personal property, as corporeal personal
property. And so what does that mean in your view? That it has to be something that solid, or that something that I can... I mean, and if that's the case, what about the testimony in the record that, the electrons have mass?
Thank you, Ron.
Okay, so doesn't that take you right back to whether we're talking about energy or electricity?
Well, we don't see a difference. Here's very critical testimony from plaintiff's own expert. And let me preface it with a stipulation. Public service stipulates that no electrons go from the generator to the home. They're not providing electrons. And let's be fair here, let's be clear. When they talk about electrons, that's part of the copper. And they say at footnote 6 in the brief, and on also page 34, I believe, of the brief, that's why they use copper. It has electrons. But when what copper does is it conducts energy.
All conductors have free electrons.
All conductors.
That's what makes them conduct.
That's what makes them work. Now, the interesting thing is when they're done conducting this electricity, this energy, copper is still copper. Nobody has transformed anything of that raw material. It simply exists in the wire. The oldest house in Denver may have the oldest copper wire in the city, but it does not need to be replaced because it's run out of electrons. The public service doesn't provide any electrons, and they've already stipulated they don't go to the consumer. But the interesting part about the testimony from their expert is that as he explained the transmission of energy along a wire across transformers, where the transformer comes together, there is an air gap. No electrons cross that gap, which is, of course, why they don't provide any. He describes the thing that crosses the gap as energy. That's what public service sells. Let's be clear. They're trying to focus on the subatomic level of the conductor, but that's not what they're selling. The testimony is customers don't take possession of electrons. It's the heat and the light go out of the room. And the genius of electricity production is that it has divorced a container for the energy from the energy itself. It can conduct energy across electrical conduits, copper wires. If I sell you wood, I've sold you something that contains that energy. But with electrical energy, the only product purchased is that energy. There is no tangible product here.
Have you read your Xcel utility bill lately?
I have, Your Honor.
Okay. What do they sell? What do you charge sales tax on to the customer?
I know there are different aspects of the bill, Your Honor, and I cannot answer the question.
Well, there are many. There are about eight categories, some of which are commodity fees, some of which are fees for their taking renewable energy and putting it into their system and charging you for it extra. What they charge for is determined by the Public Utilities Commission, and that's true of natural gas, and that's true of telephone, and those are the three items that are sold under the guy under the description of being a service. That's about the only thing they have in common. Gas is obviously a physical property. I mean, it's sold as a service. The customer pays sales tax on it. Now, because it's called a service, now the sales tax is imposed on the end user. What other industry do you know is taxed, pays sales tax on its on its equipment, and also the customers pay sales. That's taxed twice. What other industry do you know of that does that?
Your Honor, I don't believe that offhand I can answer that with an example.
I'm not aware of any.
I'm not either. And let me say, they may have a very good policy argument why they should get the exemption, but this is a massive exemption.
No, it's your arguing that it's a service and not a product, and I'm suggesting that is perhaps an artificial construct, because one of the things that's sold that way is in fact has physical body. It is tangible. It's tangible property, natural gas. The one thing they share in common is that they're regulated by the Public Utilities Commission, near as I can determine. And the bill that you pay has has some bearing, but also includes a lot of things other than the cost of manufacturing and a reasonable profit on that manufacturing process. So my question is, I don't know of any other industry that's taxed that way, where they pay tax on their raw material, pay tax on their machinery, and then the customer pays the sales tax.
That's interesting. There is no raw material here.
That's
the fundamental manufacturing problem. Let's put away tangible personal property for a second. There is no manufacturing taking place. There is no raw material. And this court in Noble Energy held that a well stream, there's no raw material known as well stream. And manufacturing requires interaction on raw material to produce a product. And even the statute even discusses it to be an article of tangible personal property. But focusing on manufacturing, there's nothing that public service takes that it alters into a final product. The only thing that it can find, thank you, Your Honor, the only thing it can find is the electrons.
Oh, wonderful. Service just somebody hit a switch, I think.
The only thing you can focus on is the electrons in the wire. But it doesn't sell the electrons, and it doesn't do anything to them. They're not raw material. They are simply in the copper wire where they remain. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Neil Pomerantz, registration number 24741, on behalf of the appellee in this case, Public Service Company of Colorado. And with me today is my partner, Mark Bedina. As the court is aware, this case asks two principal questions: whether electricity is tangible personal property, and whether the act of producing electricity is manufacturing for purposes of the state's sales tax exemption for manufacturing machinery. The district court answered yes to both questions. The facts of this case are established in a detailed set of stipulations reached by the parties prior to trial and an extensive findings of fact issued by the district court following a two-day trial in this matter. All of those facts are supported by substantial evidence in the record, and all of those facts are entitled to deference. The legal definitions at issue are stated clearly in two principal sources: the exemption statute itself, 3926709, and in a long-standing Department of Revenue regulation that further interprets the term tangible personal property. I'll turn first to why electricity is tangible personal property. The state statute defines the term as corporeal personal property. Among the stipulations reached by the parties, a number are directly relevant to applying that definition. The parties have stipulated that electrons have mass and that electrons have weight. The parties have stipulated that electrical current may be felt and indeed may be fatal. And they've stipulated that electrons are a building block of all matter. Indeed, electrons form a part of the body of every atom, of every element in the world. They are in this desk, they're in my pen, and they are moving in the wires that light these light bulbs. Though they may...
Or did for a while. Counsel, on that point, are they moving through that wire or simply moving in that wire?
I think the testimony trial was that it's both, that they both kind of push each other through the wire, and they can also move along the wire.
But didn't you stipulate that none of the electrons from your company are actually transferred to the end user?
Well, none of the electrons from the central generating plants move all the way to the customer. But Public Service Company views the manufacturing process to end at the final step-down transformer. And there are electrons that move from that final transformer into the home, into the light bulb, for example.
Does up the transformer? Moving something out of it, does it eventually use it up?
No, electrons are not consumed.
So you don't deliver anything to the consumer, physically?
We deliver electrons that are invested in properties that they didn't have. Property of voltage, property of current. That's what we deliver. And I would add to that, as a legal matter, the statute does not even require that we sell anything to our customers. It simply states that to qualify for the exemption, you need to manufacture tangible personal property for sale or profit. So even if we don't physically deliver something to our customers, if we manufacture something for profit, we qualify for the exemption. Certainly at a minimum, we're manufacturing the electrons that are invested with this voltage for profit. But we believe they are in fact delivered to the customer. They may not go all the way from the central plant to the home, but they certainly go from the final transformer outside the home into the home.
Oh, I love. Isn't the statutory definition circular?
The statutory definition of tangible personal property?
Mm-hmm. Which says it's corporeal personal property. Isn't that a circular definition?
I would say that the statutory definition is not particularly helpful by itself. And that is why the Department of Revenue's regulation that further interprets the term is important. It provides certain bright line rules, certain objective standards that can be used to determine if something is in fact corporeal, if something is in fact tangible personal property. So it tells us the tangible personal property includes all good wares, merchandise, products, commodities. If it's any one of those things, we know that it's tangible personal property. It gives a certain, it's easier to understand.
Well, the department wants us to say it's a commodity. They've agreed it's a commodity.
Certainly.
But, and under the definition that would qualify as tangible personal property. But in addition to that, you've got to satisfy the statutory definition of corporeal personal property. Do you agree with that?
I agree we have to satisfy the statutory definition. I think we absolutely do. I mean, among the stipulations are that electrons are part of the body of all matter, right? A building block of all matter, I'm sorry. That electrons have mass and weight.
You don't manufacture electrons.
We don't manufacture electrons in the same way any manufacturer wouldn't manufacture the atoms that they use to make whatever their product is. A furniture manufacturer doesn't manufacture the atoms that exist in the wood. A manufacturer of some, you know, copper product wouldn't manufacture those atoms either. What they do is they take those atoms as they are found in nature. They organize them, they invest them with new properties and qualities to create something that didn't previously exist. That's exactly what we're doing.
So I still want to understand the relationship between the regulation and the statutory definition. So the regulation says tangible personal property, I think it uses the word embraces, but for my purposes, if you say is, or and one of the things is commodities. So I guess you said you have to satisfy the statutory definition. So is it enough just to say tangible personal property is a commodity? Is that enough? Or then do you have to go further and say it satisfies that definition because it has mass or some other relevant standard beyond just saying it's a commodity?
I don't think you have to go any further. I think the fact that it's a commodity answers the question. I think once you ask the question whether or not the regulation is consistent with the statute, and we absolutely believe it is, simply because there is no commodity, product, or substance that is not tangible property. Once you establish that the regulation is consistent with the statute, if we meet the terms of the regulation, and we do by being a commodity, that answers the question.
But I realize that it says just the opposite, but what if they said tangible personal property is a right of action? Is that good enough?
At some point, you interpret the statutory definition the way it's inconsistent with the statute, and it wouldn't be.
Which means you have to look at something else.
You would have to look at something else. That's right. I don't think you need to here. But even if you do look at something else, for example, dictionary definitions of corporeal, they talk about things that have a material existence. Electrons have a material existence. They're part of every atom in the world. Scientists will tell you, as we've stipulated, they have weight, they have mass, they exist, they're real. They're not intangible personal property.
It was mentioned a while ago that, electrical energy will cross an air gap. Do electrons cross that gap?
I believe the testimony was that they do not. I couldn't say to a certainty that they never do. But again, I don't believe that's a requirement of this exemption, that you can trace.
I think if they do, you have a port.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the
first. I think if they do move across, you have a short and the transformer blows up, but I don't know that for sure. And the focus of my question was that we do somehow transfer electrons into the end user, but they're not your electrons if they don't cross the air gap, are they?
They are electrons that are freely roaming, that exist in nature. And what we do is we take those and we invest them with new properties and qualities.
Turn them into current, add voltage to make the current, and it goes down the line to the transformer. It jumps the air gap, and something happens. Nobody's explained that yet as to what you're actually delivering across that air gap. Energy?
No, we're delivering electrons that have new properties. Let me try to answer it this way as well. If you hired me to manufacture a desk for you, and I decided that I was going to use the wood in your own backyard, I wasn't going to supply it myself. I was going to take wood that you already had and make your desk. That would no less be manufacturing. So whether these electrons we collect from someplace at our generating plant or beyond, or whether we find them in the wire that goes from the final step-down transformer into the home, I don't think is material to applying the exemption. We don't have to create them anew. The electrons exist. What we do create that's new is the new properties, the new qualities, the new characteristics of those electrons. There would be no such thing as electrical current, at least not in any saleable form, but for the activities of public utility. There would be no electrons that are invested with the capacity to perform work, voltage, unless there was a public utility that was supplying that quality. We do that. And the fact that those electrons are found closer to the home, further from the home, is not relevant to application of this legal standard.
Do you know of any personal property that is not tangible or intangible?
I don't. I absolutely
agree. Well, the department has said that they agree it's not intangible. Doesn't that mean it's tangible?
Yes.
Does your argument rise or fall on the regulation? What if the regulation didn't exist and all you had was statutory definition of tangible personal property, which basically says it's corporeal? How would we as an appellate court figure out whether what's involved here, whether you call it electricity or energy, fits that definition? What if we didn't have the regulation?
I think you could look to a few sources. You could look to definitions, as I've mentioned, if you look to the
When you say definitions, you mean look to the dictionary, basically.
Look to the dictionary.
Okay. Yeah.
A very common definition that you will also find in common law around the country asks whether the item can be seen, weighed, measured, felt, or is otherwise perceptible. If it's any one of those things, it's tangible personal property.
It's a common law definition. Yeah. And we can go to the common law to determine the meaning of the word, if necessary.
Sure, and in Steamboat Springs Leasing, that was the case involving Denver's definition of tangible personal property. Denver defined a tangible personal property the same way as corporeal personal property, but they didn't have a regulation. And the court asked that very question, whether or not the property could be seen, weighed, measured, felt, or is otherwise perceptible. So I think that would be an appropriate place to look if there was a reason to believe that the regulation here was somehow inconsistent with the statute. I don't believe it is. I think it's an appropriate way to interpret the statutory language. I think it gives people instructions that they can easily understand and follow. As Your Honor has said, I don't think there is anything that fits one of those categories and is not intangible personal property. That's not tangible. It's one or the other, right? I think that the regulation is a very reasonable way to interpret that statutory language. I don't think you need to look any further. But if you did, by any of the other metrics, the dictionary definitions, Black's Law Dictionary, common law standards, electricity, electrons is tangible. I'll move to the second major issue before the court, which is whether the production of electricity constitutes manufacturing under the exemption statute. And the statute defines manufacturing rather simply as the act of, quote, producing a new product, article, substance, or commodity different from and having a distinctive name, character, or use from raw or prepared materials. Quite simply, the output of the process must be different in name, character, or use from the original materials that go into the process.
What are those original materials?
They are free-roaming, impotent electrons. Principally, it's the electrons that have.
You consider the coal or the natural gas or the nuclear energy to be raw material?
I would probably more likely consider them prepared materials. The pulverized coal I would view more as a prepared material. I think it's fair to refer to it as a raw material as well. Absolutely, because without it, you couldn't complete the process.
Without you create.
That's right. But certainly the electrons go into the process in a disorganized state without any voltage, without any capacity to perform any work, without the ability to light a light bulb or power an engine. They come out with the ability to do that. That's the transformation of a raw material into a product that is not only different in name, it's different in character, and it's different in uses from the free-roaming electrons that go into the process.
Almost invariably, it's creating heat.
Yes.
In the use, it's creating heat from which it came.
Yes, Your Honor. The Colorado Supreme Court has three times addressed the question of whether or not generating electricity is a manufacturing process. Two of them we cited in our briefs. Those are the Lamborn cases and the Camford mining cases. Those are very old cases. They have been cited over the intervening decades by many other states in interpreting manufacturing machinery exemptions that are essentially identical to the one at issue here. They have been cited as a basis for finding that the generation of electricity is a manufacturing process. I want to note that in preparing for the oral argument, we found a third case, and that was the Niemet case. That's 843 P. Second 87. What's interesting about that case is that involved a field transformer, and it was a tort case. It was a case brought by a gentleman who was injured when a transformer exploded, and the manufacturer of that transformer defended on grounds that the claim was subject to the statute of repose and was barred. The court ultimately found that the statute of repose did not apply, but one of the elements under the statute of repose at issue was that the equipment had to be new manufacturing equipment. And what's critical is that the statute in that case defined manufacturing equipment with almost identical language to the definition of manufacturing in the sales tax statute that we're dealing with. It defined it as meaning equipment used in the operation or process of producing a new product, article, substance, or commodity for the purposes of commercial sale and different from and having a distinctive name, character, or use from raw or prepared materials. All the language from the tax definition of manufacturing is found in that definition. While the court found that the statute of repose didn't apply for other reasons, it did find that the transformer was a piece of manufacturing equipment under that definition. So yet another.
What was the name of the case?
Niemet, N-I-E-M-E-T, 843 P. Second 87.
Let me interrupt you a minute. Counselor, are you familiar with that case?
No, Your Honor, I'm not.
Would you like an opportunity to... Do you have a copy of that case for counsel with you?
I do.
Would you like an opportunity to respond to that citation?
It might be helpful, Your Honor, but since I don't know the extent of the case or discussion, it might be more
helpful. No, I mean to do it in writing, after to respond in writing to that case.
Certainly.
Well, fine. We'll let you do that. Give us a written letter, not more than about 4 or 5 pages long, discussing that case. Addressed to us individually. If you address it to the court, while we're very efficient, we may never see it. And so address it to us personally and send 3 copies, and you can, we'll review it.
And Your Honor, I apologize for bringing it up now. It wasn't a case that we had focused on until preparation for this argument. And apart from that case, there were the 2 earlier cases dating back to the late 1800s that I think are, you know, really do address the question here. The manufacture of electricity hasn't changed much over 120 years. It's essentially the same as the way it started in the 1890s. It's quite a bit more efficient than it was, but the operations, the principles, really have not changed. I'd like to, I guess, further address the department's contention that production of electricity isn't manufacturing because no raw material input can be identified in the finished product. As a legal matter, that contention is flawed. All the authority that the department has cited for that requirement applies to an entirely different tax exemption. That's the exemption for the raw material itself that becomes an ingredient or component part of a finished product. That's found in 3926.102(20). That requirement doesn't exist in this exemption statute. The legislature certainly knows how to state that requirement if it means for it to apply. They haven't stated it here.
So you addressed the issue of your transformers and wires, whether they are part of the manufacturing process?
Yeah. The definition of manufacturing, I'm sorry, there's a one of the subparts of this the exemption statute, provides very clearly that the manufacturing process does not end until the product reaches its completed form. This product doesn't reach its completed form until it exits that final step-down transformer at the 120 or 200 volts that are required by our customers. It's important to note that nowhere at our generating plants is electricity anywhere near 120 or 240 volts. The electricity exits the generator at the plant at over 13,000 volts. It's not usable at that level. It has to be stepped down. I don't think there would be any dispute that if those transformers were brought onto the central plant site, that they would be part of the manufacturing process. The fact that they are moved off the site doesn't change that analysis. There is nothing in the exemption statute that requires that an entire manufacturing process take place at a single location.
And indeed, you couldn't transmit the power at 110, 240, whatever.
That's right. The testimony was that the losses would be so enormous that you would literally have to be a millionaire to light your house for a single day. I believe my time is up.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
I believe you have a little over 2 minutes, a little under 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. The question was asked about, how do electrons not flow across the air gap? Let me point out, they stipulated that they don't flow. So we know one thing absolutely in this case, they are providing nothing physical from that generation plant to the house. Their claim is that the wire that comes into my house has electrons, and they're making those electrons agitate and that thereby transmitting the energy. And that's why it's a physical product. That is a fiction. It is not fair in interpreting a 1935 Act to think that the legislator was talking about electrons agitating in a wire that's not sold. Copper is not sold. Electrons make up the copper. They're not selling copper. They're not selling light bulbs. The only thing they're selling is energy, and that's why they call themselves.
But they are converting the electrons into a usable power source.
They're converting the energy contained in the chemical stored energy in the coal and in the fuel oil into heat energy, into mechanical energy, into electrical energy, and then they're transmitting that electrical energy across the conductors, and that's what's being used.
And in the course of doing that, they are changing the electrons, they're modifying the electrons so that they flow in a current.
No, Your Honor, I just
create a current.
When they turn that current off, copper is still just copper. Not only have they not sold it, they haven't moved it. It's still exactly where it was. And the expert testified that the electrons stay in the wire. The only thing that goes out into the room is heat and light, whatever form of energy that the customer wants to use it. They're not selling electrons. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I want to thank both counsel for their arguments and briefs. The case will be deemed submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.